Blog Talk Radio.
Afternoon and good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Team DLW Unity Movement here on the J. King Radio Network, and I'm your host, Mr. DLW. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We are back for another Blacktastic show here on this Sunday afternoon. It's a beautiful day outside. Ladies and gentlemen, temperatures are right around 70 degrees, right where I like it. The sun's not beaming down. It's a little cloudy out there, but it's okay. It's all right. You know, it's better than the alternative, all that snow all over the place. But hey, listen, we got a great show lined up for you all today. You know, last week we talked about the trial that's going on, and we want justice. This week is We Want Justice Too. This is our part two of the situation that's going on with George Floyd's killer on trial. It's been going on for the last 10 days or so. And before we get into all of that, we are going to remind everyone that you can join us here on the Team DLW Unity Movement simply by giving us a call at 515-605-9376. And for those who choose to, if you want to listen to it a little bit later, you can always archive the show and go to our website at teamdlw.com and pull yourself right on in, click the button and check it out. And remember, this is the show that focuses on educating, elevating, and motivating our listeners to a higher level of consciousness and awareness in order to empower and uplift our communities around the world. And at this particular time, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring in our facilitator of Educate and Protect. Let's welcome Brother Joel Birch.
Happy Sunday, brother. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday to you too, my man. How you doing today?
I'm fair for a square, hanging in there, you know, one day at a time.
All right.
One breath at a time.
Right on. Fair for a square. I'm hanging in there. I like that, brother. I love it. I love it. Indeed. Indeed. Well, you know what? We're going to keep it squared up because, you know, them gangsters, they don't live too long.
Oh, no.
But it's
that.
All good.
Yeah, yeah.
Right on. Right
keep
on.
Square.
Indeed, indeed. Well, just reminding everybody what the show is going to be about today, George Floyd's killer. I refuse to say this man's name. But his killer is on trial, been on trial for the last 10 days with closing arguments due very soon. And it's time to pay the piper, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to convict this man. We've heard from all the witnesses. We've heard from the coroners. We heard from the doctors. We heard from the EMS response team. We've heard from the police chief. We've heard from everyone who has anything to do with this case. And again, the finger still points at the fact that this man kept a knee on this man's neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds. So we're going to talk a little bit about this more in detail. And we'll also discuss the facts of the case and what the verdict will mean for a country that's still healing. Either way it goes, whether there's a guilty verdict handed down or if for some strange reason this man is found innocent. We'll also discuss a little bit about the Georgia State Representative, the Sister Park Cannon, who is fighting bogus charges for knocking on the door of Governor Brian Kemp. And while he signed an election overhaul bill into law, and we will we'll definitely discuss that. And also we'll have Educate and Protect with Brother Joel Birch, the gentleman you just heard a few moments ago. And we'll also have our third segment of Pretty Revolutionary by Brittany Turner. So, hey, sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and put on your headphones and get ready for another Blacktastic show. I'm going to ask my brother Joel, are you ready for another Blacktastic show?
Hey, yo, you know, we stay ready, but we ain't got to get ready. We ready.
We ready.
Are you ready to make money? Lincoln Heritage Life Insurance Company is seeking agents in Indiana, Florida, Ohio, and Virginia. Contact Ebony Fire at 216-224-5311 for details.
2 hour history, there's always been the same question. How come black people don't seem to get further on the economic scale? This is a question with multiple answers. First, comes slavery. Second, not knowing our history. And last, not sticking together. There's a beautiful African proverb that we unfortunately seem to forget. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. This quote still stands for today. If we as black people want to get higher on the economic ladder, so where do we start? Well, by supporting black-owned businesses. Money is not the solution to our problems, but a tool to build our own economy. The time is now to support black-owned businesses. Black Economic Network, where black-owned businesses come together.
It's your girl, Rhonda Supreme, and you are tuned into the Team DLW Unity Movement. Check it out every Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with your man, Mr. DLW. And now, back to the show.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And, we're about to talk about this case because it's in a state in which some people might lose their mind. I think we're going to really have to take a strong look at this because if there's a not guilty verdict rendered, it's going to be a lot of people losing their cool and tripping out. And we don't want that. We don't want people to just lose their mind and trip out, you know. Big shout out to the legendary DMX giving us that beautiful music. We're going to talk about him a little bit later and share a little bit of his music a little bit further later in the show. But hey, Joel, we here it is. We've had 10 days of testimony with this particular case. And as I said, we've heard from everyone, and in detail, it's been a little redundant. And we've gotten to the point where Okay, it's time for closing argument. Everyone, I believe, that has spoken and taken the stand has taken the stand, with the exception of the coward himself. And I'm not sure if he's going to do that. I'm not sure if his lawyers are going to allow him to take the stand. What do you think?
I don't think that they will. I mean, knowing the case, you know, from what I've seen, you know, publicly, you know, just thinking as a defense lawyer, he has an incredible task. I mean, he's grasping at straws a lot of times. His questions are circular. They're often misleading, you know, in terms of, you know, how he gets at. I won't say misleading, because that would be, you know, something that the prosecutor could object to. But he definitely beats around the bush. He doesn't talk about the facts. He uses a lot of hypotheticals. And so I think that, you know, putting the accused on the stand would give the prosecution a chance to ask questions too, which I don't think they want. I mean,
right.
I wouldn't think, you know, I don't think that would be a good play. Because I mean, obviously, just the evidence is overwhelming. You know, anything that he could possibly, you know, answer, he would have to take the Fifth Amendment on, because it could probably incriminate himself, at which point it doesn't really cast him in any better light. But, yeah, I don't think that he should take the stand. I just think they need to hurry up and, you know, get to the verdict already. I mean, it's not even hard to tell in this case. You know what I mean?
Let's get to the closing arguments.
My
thought is, let's get to the closing argument so we can allow this jury to make their determination, convict this man unanimously, and, you know, schedule a sentencing for him. And then this would show, a conviction will show the world that this can't be tolerated.
Exactly.
A not guilty verdict will send the wrong message, not only to this country, but to the entire world. A not guilty verdict would send a message that you can do anything that the police would be called for, and you run a strong chance of losing your life over a counterfeit $20 bill. You know, the young man who's behind the counter. But the young man behind the counter said, you know, if I had known that all this was going to happen, I'd have paid the $20 myself.
And that's that should not even be his burden.
Exactly. No, it's not. But that's heavy for that young man to carry. I know that's a heavy burden for him to carry, and it's not his burden to carry. You know, all the blame lies on that police officer and the officers that stood around him, allowing him to do that. It has to be. Now, when we talk about hypotheticals, let me ask you this. If this coward was to take the stand, you're the prosecutor, what questions do you ask him?
I don't think that, you know, I would be the one, because I will start to get a little hot under the collar, because, you know, again, this is kind of personal for me. And
right.
I think that, you know, I wouldn't be able to stay objective. You know, because I, without having some type of professional training in law and, you know, lines of questions, I mean, some questions I would like to ask him is, when did you think it was okay to get up? And what made it okay for you to get up? My other question would be, why, if you were feeling so uneasy, why did you have your hands in your pocket? You know, if you were truly a peace officer, what level of peace did you even try to implement? Did you try to use any type of, you know, even as an educator, we're trained to diffuse situations because, you know, I worked inside of a detention center where I had, you know, young men that were charged with, you know, armed robbery, assault, and even murder in some cases. And, you know, it gets real in the field. And you got to be able to have the skills to put some chill in people before somebody get killed for real. And so in real time, you know, knowing how to talk to people, knowing who you're talking to, and choosing your battles. Because it's like if I'm an officer on duty and I get called to a scene because somebody has got a phony bill, you know, I'm not coming in, you know, guns blazing. You know, even if the guy was reported to be on drugs, it wasn't reported that he was armed and dangerous. So there was no reason for him to come out with his with their firearms pulled out because as a black man, I know the fear and the helplessness and the lost feeling and, you know, you hope you're not about to die tonight. You know, and that's the only thing that you can think of because you're in a physical altercation with multiple cops. And so you think in any minute it could be over. And so it's like, how do you take, you know, your job seriously when you can literally antagonize folks just because you've got a call of a suspected crime? I could see, again, that there should be, I don't know if there is, but if there's, they were talking about those degrees of or those criteria of critical thinking that you go through when you are called to a scene. And, you know, your presence should be the first thing. You just being a uniformed officer should cause people to get on alert and to kind of square up for a second and at least stop doing what you're doing, you know, and then use your voice, you know, but then you're going to go straight to using, you know, draw your weapon and go straight from there to using deadly force for a suspected crime that, you know, didn't require an arrest. The only thing that's required in that situation is a ticket. So there was no need for an arrest. If he was going to do his job and do his due diligence, he could have cut the ticket, put it on the man's hood of his car and told him to have a nice day. But he was looking for blood. And, you know, that this man has had over 21 complaints of assault or excessive use of force.
Shouldn't have never been on the street.
Like, you know, if this was a case on the street and, you know, somebody had 21 priors at any point in their a trial, the verdict coming back is going to yield a sentence that was going to be, you know, exponentially greater than it would be for a first-time offender. But, you know, the fact that, you know, he's even being considered to be, you know, oh, I was trained to do this. You know, he's being considered to somehow be doing his job. It's appalling to me. And I'm sure it's appalling to all good officers, you know, that have ever put on the uniform. So the question that I would ask him would certainly start to get, you know, into his personality and his psychology because, you know, that's a depraved mind. You know, that's you got a track record of this type of behavior. Something's the matter. And had you gotten help before you killed somebody, you know, you could have saved two lives, but now you have to throw your life away and this man and the rest of his family that has to walk around and carry that burden in the community. And like you said, this is now a worldwide, you know, public trial. So,
they had an opportunity to interview the medical examiner who performed the autopsy, and I want to play that part right now. And of course, this is very graphic information, ladies and gentlemen. So if you have children in the room, you might want to have them exit the room. But in the meantime, I want to play this very short clip so you can hear Dr. Baker say in his opinion that George Floyd underlining heart disease meant that the heart needed more oxygen than a normal heart. He said that his enlarged heart, it was somewhat enlarged. The law enforcement subdued restraint, and the neck compression was just more than Mr. Floyd could take by virtue of those heart conditions. And here.
So, Dr. Baker, can you tell us how it is physiologically that the subdual restraint and neck compression caused Mr. Floyd's death?
In my opinion, the physiology of what was going on with Mr. Floyd on the evening of May 25th is you've already seen the photographs of his coronary arteries, so that you know he had very severe underlying heart disease. I don't know that we specifically got to it, counselor, but Mr. Floyd also had what we call hypertensive heart disease, meaning his heart weighed more than it should. So he has a heart that already needs more oxygen than a normal heart by virtue of its size, and it's limited in its ability to step up to provide more oxygen when there's demand because of the narrowing of his coronary arteries. Now, in the context of an altercation with other people that involves things like physical restraint, that involves things like being held to the ground, that involves things like the pain that you would incur from having your cheek up against the asphalt and an abrasion on your shoulder, those events are going to cause stress hormones to pour out into your body, specifically things like adrenaline. And what that adrenaline is going to do is it's going to ask your heart to beat faster. It's going to ask your body for more oxygen so that you can get through that altercation. And in my opinion, the law enforcement subdual restraint and the neck compression was just more than Mr. Floyd could take by virtue of those heart conditions.
And that was Dr. Baker, the physician that performed the autopsy. And so, you know, with that being said, it wasn't because of any drugs or anything of that nature. It was because the man had no oxygen that could get to his heart because of, you know, a knee on his neck for over 9 minutes. So this is something I hate to see. This is, you know, all the cases in which police officers have been taken to trial and been exonerated for some reason or another is sickening. This particular one, I can't see any other way that they don't find this man guilty on all charges. There's absolutely no way, because what the defense is trying to get us to do is say that our eyes are lying to us. We didn't see this man's foot or his knee on his neck for 9 minutes. We didn't see that. You know, that's not what he died from. They're trying to pull the banana in the tailpipe on us again. They're trying to use the Jedi mind trick on us, ladies and gentlemen. And we can't fall for it. We can't fall for it. Believe your eyes. One of the first comments that the prosecution said during the opening statement, you can believe your eyes. You can. And oh, my goodness, this is my grandson calling me. He know good and well I'm on the air. Anyway, believe your eyes, ladies and gentlemen, because you saw what you saw, and you saw this police officer take this man's life. So we have to make sure that's the verdict that the jury comes back with, guilty on all charges. It's my understanding that the jury is not necessarily a jury of his peers, but they are smart individuals. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see and comprehend the facts of this case. So we
even the kids saw that.
Yes, yes. We need a guilty verdict on all charges on this. If Joel, you have another comment about this, you can make it now, because I want to play another clip in which one particular person, let me see who he was. Let me take a look again at this. I believe it was Dr. Thomas who gave testimony, an expert who testified in the case of what the extent of this officer's knee did to George Floyd. And he explains it pretty much in detail. Did you have anything
expert?
Else? I believe
it's
so.
Clip from the pulmonary expert. Yeah, let's go ahead and check him out, and then we'll come back.
Okay, let's check this out. Okay, this is a little commercial. We're going to mute that until it's done. It's almost done. But I believe this is the pulmonary expert that you mentioned who gives us a clear understanding of the effects of a knee on someone's neck and the weight of that particular person. So here it is.
Key witness at Derek Chauvin's murder trial told the jury it wasn't drugs or health problems that killed George Floyd. What was done to him would have killed a healthy person. The witness compared Floyd's struggle to breathe to having a lung removed. And we want to warn you, some of the testimony is graphic. CBS's Jamie Yukas reports from Minneapolis. Another stunning day of testimony as pulmonary expert Dr. Martin Tobin tells jurors plain and simply what he believes caused George Floyd's death.
Mr. Floyd died from a low level of oxygen.
Tobin says Floyd being handcuffed in a prone position and sandwiched between the street and the officers on top of him all contributed to his difficulty breathing.
He's having to use all his entire spine to just try and get air into that right side of the body.
At one point, Floyd's leg goes up.
The brain is responding to the drastically low level of oxygen.
Tobin estimated Chauvin's knee was on Floyd's neck 90% of the time.
Half of his body weight plus half his gear weight is coming down. That's 91.5 pounds is coming down directly on Mr. Floyd's neck.
The most dramatic testimony when Tobin shows jurors in slow motion what he believes to be Floyd's final moments.
You can see his eyes, he's conscious, and then you see that he isn't. And that's the moment the life goes out.
Oh, my God.
The knee remains on the neck for another 3 minutes and 27 seconds after he takes his last breath.
During cross-examination, the defense pointed to the fact that fentanyl was found in Floyd's system, something Tobin pushed back on.
Any evidence then that any fentanyl in his system depressed his breathing in any way whatsoever?
No.
Tobin also said it's dangerous to think that a person's breathing is okay just because they can speak.
Yes, I mean, they're able to breathe at that moment in time, but 10 seconds later, they may be dead.
Despite Tobin testifying for hours, it was reported that jurors remained very attentive through all of it, with many taking notes. We expect the medical examiner to take the stand tomorrow. Nora?
Very powerful testimony. Jamie, you good? Thank you.
Well.
For a while.
Amazing. Amazing. I'm sitting here watching this, and you could actually see this man take his last breath. Mm-hmm. And he never moved. This murderous cop never moved. He didn't lift his leg not one moment during that time. He kept his knee on his neck for another 3 minutes. For another 3 minutes after this man had expired. 91.5 pounds of pressure on his neck. And there's nothing else to say except guilty on all charges.
Yeah, man. America is unfortunately operating the way it was designed to when it comes to declassifying certain citizens and the remnants of all of that horrible, acceptable brutalization is still with us in ways that fortunately we can't control, because the same way that we've got trauma, you know, passed down from, you know, the victimization and the oppression of, you know, slavery and, you know, systematic, you know, discrimination, you know, white folks got a problem too. You know, they can't get that hatred out their heart. You know, it's like we've been victimized, and in a lot of ways, you know, we've been able to heal from some of that brutalization and be able to move on without having that same level of, you know, retaliation or revenge. You know, I heard it said a few weeks ago that, you know, American society should be glad that black folks are only asking for equity and not revenge. It would be a completely different ball game if every black person wanted their reparations and their pound of flesh back. As the same way that history goes, they keep trying to push that same scenario. That's why I keep looking at this case like, if there was ever a powder keg that could get sparked and this just go from, you know, it's all, you know, as the old folks used to say, from the jump out the grease into the fire, you know, this would be one of those moments, you know, where this George Floyd thing don't work out like it should. And people, you know, don't have a choice but to get angry. And, you know, it's
going to make
like
people lose their mind.
Yeah, they want to stoke that fire, you know, and they want to pour gasoline on the fire because, you know, ultimately when we start to look at, you know, there's positive energy, there's negative energy, you know, we start to assign those energies to certain entities based on what you believe. To look at how prominent this negative energy is in our society and how acceptable it's become, it's desensitizing us. It's exhausting us. It's keeping us from wanting to fight the good fight, to get in good trouble. You know, we're constantly being put in this position where we need to, you know, revert back to, you know, our more, I would say, not our caveman selves. But right, go back to more prehistoric values and start, you know, cracking skulls. But, you know, we've learned that that's not good for anybody, because in a few more generations, they'll be trying to turn around and start cracking our skulls again. And at some point, it has to stop. And I think that, you know, with the pressure, you know, seemingly the ostensible pressure, I don't know if the United States is ready to make that turn. The people are, but remember, the United States of America is an organization before it is a nation. Because if it was truly a nation, then it would be fighting to protect, you know, the values of the people. And, you know, what's great and crazy about this whole thing is that the values of people change over time. And you can't keep trying to push people back into a, you know, certain way of thinking or, you know, even living, you know, based off of something that was in the past. And so, you know, moving forward, looking at this situation with George Floyd and looking at how the system hasn't really held up its end of the bargain because they've always had a hidden agenda. Well, you know, what's done in the darkness will eventually come to light. And so now America don't have a choice. You know, you used to be able to get away with this because, you know, there wasn't social media everywhere. You know, you could say whatever you wanted to in the papers and, you know, you would deal with the backlash later. But now with everything going viral, and instead of, you know, you got a certain you know, something untoward happens to a citizen and you can sweep it under the rug, that's getting harder to do. So America's going to have a choice. They're going to have to do it out in the open, or they're going to have to, you know, they're going to keep protecting it. It's enough already.
Right, right. Exactly. You're absolutely right, brother. Listen, let's go to the phone lines. We got one of our longtime listeners and one of our biggest supporters on the line right now, and he makes the best cheesecakes across this land that we call the United States. Let's welcome in Brother Lambert Davis. How you doing, Lambert? How's it going?
As good as it can be, but I wanted to first ask how you were feeling, because I knew you were under the weather before I ride in here on this topic.
Well, I'm doing real good, Lambert. I thank you for asking, brother. I'm back. I'm healthy. I just had a little bout with some bronchitis. Thank God it wasn't pneumonia. It wasn't nothing else. It wasn't COVID. Nothing like that. All tests are negative. No blood clots, nothing like that. Just a little bit of bronchitis. Had to get a little bit of oxygen, open up these alveolaries a little bit, and we're going to keep it rolling as I get this. I find me a pool so I can really work on my cardio, man, because, you know, I want to keep the, you know, keep this big body off these joints and, you know, get in the water to where I'm a little weightless and work myself back into good shape. But, yeah, I appreciate you asking, my brother. We're talking about this George Floyd's killer trial that's been going on for the last 10 days. We talked about how it's time. It's time to pay the piper. This is a situation where it's been 10 days of testimony, very redundant with a lot of information that's been brought to the forefront. Everybody's been interviewed, from the police chief to the ambulance drivers, the EMS drivers, the expert witnesses. Everyone has been interviewed, and it all points to 9 minutes and 30 seconds, pretty much, of this man with a knee on George Floyd's neck. And what is this country going to look like while we're still trying to heal and recover from 4 years of hell under the last administration? What do you see happening in the closing arguments, and what verdict do you think they'll come up with, Lambert?
Well, you know, you're talking to a person that is a huge, huge supporter of Louis Farrakhan. So now you're talking to a person that you might have to mute when I go ahead and lay out what I'm getting ready to say. But
no, brother, hold on. Let me get the right music for you, because, you know, a lot of us kind of feel the same way, brother. So go ahead and say what you got to say.
Well, as a person who studied Rodney King's case, the only thing I see they did not do, they didn't change the venue. But, you know, white folks, Caucasians, whatever they call them, Kenites, just very hateful people, if they say that this murderer, that's what he is, he's a murderer, and the other three are murderers too. They had two police with their knees on him, handcuffed, and they had a Asian police. I didn't hear no Asian outroar with that one Asian police who was blocking, trying to block the view of filming that other act. So what I have to say, personally, being out here on the West Coast, we know about police. There's no question about the police. As a matter of fact, I saw a situation, I think it was in Virginia, some brother was in his military outfit driving a car. He pulled, which was brilliant, he pulled up into a gas station, lit up, and the police got out as though he had done something, and they actually pulled guns on. Then they pepper sprayed him before he even got out the car. I'm just speaking for me. If they let this police go and say not guilty, it's going to be a bloodbath in this country. It's going to be a bloodbath. You can't tell the youth after that, well, you know, let's just go along. Everybody saw it. So if they're wise, and they may not be, they may be arrogant. But if they say not guilty, it's on after that. It's on.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, I had to agree with you. I definitely had to agree with you. I believe if a not guilty verdict comes back, it will be an immediate response from not just people throughout the country. I think around the world.
Not only will it be around the world, just like the people responded with protests, but I would like to say shout out to the Black Panthers, because the Black Panthers really was patrolling the police that were watching kill. Now, of course, this is their children or grandchildren doing this, but shout out to the Black Panthers, because they moved on them, and they were protecting the Black community with guns. So I always give credit to the Black Panthers. They did what they could, and then it took the whole government to break them up and kill them off and put them in jail. So I don't think they can put us all in jail if it jumps off.
Yeah.
So that's me.
Yeah. I just don't want to see that happen. I hate for that to happen. I hate for not only for the family of George Floyd, but for the growth of this country. I'd hate to see a not guilty verdict happen, because it's going to set us back. It's going to set us way back. You're going to see people take action, and no, I don't think the right thing to do is rioting. I don't think the right thing to do is start shooting cops and things of that nature. But
what do you think the people should do if it's not guilty? What do you think they should do?
Well, I don't want to see rioting, but the first thing I'd like to see done is people who are in office start to change these laws that's allowing these police officers to get off. It should be mandatory. When a police officer has shot and killed someone or have taken a life, as they have with George Floyd, it should be mandatory that not only do they lose their job, you're not sent on a paid leave of absence. You lose your job. You should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law as if you were anyone else in terms of taking a life. Because your first job is to protect and serve. And there was no protection here, and there was no service rendered at all. This officer should be prosecuted, and I use that term very loosely, to the fullest extent of the law. To the fullest extent of the law. This would show other officers who have this mentality to do one of two things: get out of law enforcement or change your ways. And most lepers don't change their spots, especially when they've been taught and been doing this all their lives. So we have to make sure that we hold the people accountable who are changing these laws, hold them accountable for making the laws that prosecute these people to the fullest extent of the law. That's not going to happen overnight, but that's where we have to start. We have to start somewhere. I mean, I can say, you know, if a non-guilty verdict come back, that we should look for every crooked cop and string them up, you know. But that's not going to solve
that,
the problem.
What's that mean when you say string them up? What's that mean?
You just string them up, just like they strung us up. String them up from the highest tree. Yeah, people can say that. But that's not going to solve the problem, Lambert. That's what I'm saying, you know. But it's got to get to a point to where an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a life for a life has to be accounted for. The laws of justice, that pendulum or whatever that thing is, it has to start swinging towards righteousness. It's time. It's well overdue. It's time to pay the piper. It's time to pay the piper.
Well, I mean, let me interject one last thing to show you the views I have. The only great thing I see happening is that the Caucasian birth rate is declining. That's the only hope we have, because God is curtailing their birth rate. You know, that's why they're changing all the voting laws, because they know if they vote one person, one vote, they don't have the population to win elections. They have to cheat. See, they know their time is up, and usually when somebody is desperate, they'll do whatever they have to do. These white folks' time is up. It's up. Mm-hmm. No matter what people try to reason and try to understand these wicked people that call themselves law enforcement, if you watch the insurrection at the Capitol, it's come out now. Police are part of that insurrection. So you got the same police riding around black neighborhoods. Look what they did to Tamir Rice. He didn't even get a chance. They don't care about black people, and I pray that God destroys their birth rate and keep destroying it, so that our children and grandchildren, they may see biracial people, but they won't see white people much here shortly in the next few years, 20 years, maybe sooner than that. But, no, it's going to take God Almighty to stop these white folks, and he's doing it by their birth rate.
Good point.
Hope
very
that don't
point.
Shock everybody, but check your statistics on that. White folks are dying more than they're creating babies. That's big to me.
Fear. Yeah.
So that's
listen,
it for me. Good to talk to you, bro.
Hey, thanks a lot, Lambert. Please stick around if you like, bro. We're going to continue to have a discussion of this. We're going to take a quick musical break, and when we come back, we're going to finish up this particular topic and then jump into the situation that's going on down in Georgia with State Representative Park Cannon as she fights these bogus charges for knocking on the governor's door, Governor Brian Kemp, and why he signed this election overhaul bill into law. And that's something else that is going on that we need to talk about as far as that bill is concerned, because it's being it's not only going on in Georgia. You know, that deal is going to be voted on in many other states around the country. So we're going to take a quick break with John Legend and Common as they ask people to wake up. You know, time to wake up, y'all. We'll be right back right after this on the Team DOW Unity Movement. We'll be right back.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, y'all. Black Torture Boss DJ from around the way, and you're listening to WAKE Radio, spreading tunes across your room. From Marvin Gaye to Hathaway, from Nina Simone to Pendergrass, we pay tribute to the legends of the past and introduce the legends of the future. Special big up to my man Johnny Stevens, who shares his passion with us every day. Wake up, New York.
Thank you. Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There is so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, oh yeah.
Time to wake up, everybody. It's definitely well past due. Time to wake up. See what's going on. Understand what's going on. And do something in your community to fight against it. Brother Joe, I think we've said just about all we can say in terms of this particular trial. I think at this point, we have to wait for the verdict, see if they'll put this man on the stand. I don't think they will. I think that we'll hear closing arguments within the next 2 days, I'm assuming. And then hopefully by the end of this week, we'll get a guilty on all charges verdict. That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I'm expecting. Your thoughts?
We can only hope, and you know, I want to talk about this a little later if we get the chance, about truth and truth and reality. You know, because the truth of the matter is, even a 9-year-old can tell what happened here. It doesn't take all of this to determine what actually happened. But again, this is the system, how it operates. This is what gives people like the accused officer, this is what gives them a chance to get off, because you start to stretch the truth to create an alternate reality. And I was taught that 99.9% of the truth is a lie. And 101% of the truth is also a lie. The truth is the truth, and our reality doesn't affect the truth. Our perspectives, our perceptions on life, our outlooks, they don't change the truth. And in this case, we can see the truth. We can see exactly what happened. But the system is designed through all of the rigmarole and, you know, quote-unquote due process, there's opportunities for people, the accused, to get off. Because we don't, what do we know about these jurors? When you put it in the hands of 12 other individuals and they have to come up to a consensus, otherwise he gets off. If it's not a unanimous guilty verdict, it only takes one person to feel like he's not guilty. And they won't get a guilty verdict. That's crazy. It's like, right, you can have the entire world see something and let one person out of the 12 that's supposed to go along with what the truth has already been accepted and known to be, just based off of facts and not even hearsay or, you know, some type of, you know, reconstruction of the truth. But it's just the America that we live in. I heard a comedian say the other week that, you know, he wishes he could go back in time and talk to some of the writers and the formers of the Constitution, some of the quote-unquote so-called founding fathers. And he starts saying, he got mad at me because he turned around and looked at me and like, y'all ain't writing nothing else? We really sitting here with a 200-year-old document trying to force feed society into this antiquated way of government. And while I believe that it's great, I just think that it's too complex. There's too many loopholes. There's too much jargon. You know, if it's built for the people, why should you have to have somebody that studied law or somebody that's some type of grammarian, a language master, to interpret the rights of the people, to understand the laws of the land? You know, I believe that the dumbing down of this nation and, you know, defunding education and, you know, redlining, you know, communities and, you know, devaluing neighborhoods, you know, all of it plays into, you know, why we can't fix this system. And, you know, to think about what it would take to overhaul it or redo it is monumental. And the brother that called in spoke directly to it. It's on God. On God. We got to wait. Because that's what it's going to take, is for people that have been, you know, either traumatized. And like in our community, we've got people that have been traumatized and they don't know how to make their next move, their best move. They kind of become complacent, or they become so frustrated and, you know, filled with sadness and anger that, you know, they have nothing left but vengeful reactions. But in other, you know, ways, we need to be more proactive so that, you know, we don't get caught in this same system that's been ensnaring us. But the only way that's going to happen is if the population changes. And the brother's right. You're starting to see more commercials that have mixed couples on there, where it's either a black and a white person, a black person and an Asian person, a white person and an Asian person, you know, Latinas, Latinos, just, you know, mixed in with everybody else, trying to prepare our minds for what's going to be coming probably sooner than later. And lastly, I feel like this has been the biggest fear of the white man, is that we don't have to use guns to, you know, overthrow you. You can be bred out. You can be bred out. You can have children. If you have black children or you have non-white children with white parents, they're going to be mixed. It's just going to continue to be that way until slowly but surely white people become the minority in this country, and especially on the planet. The white people are already the minority. I mean, you can't look at the globe and you can look at the globe and see that Europe and the United States,
mm-hmm.
Australia, even Australia is really ours, you know. But that's the sum total of where the majority of the white people are. Everything else is non-white. So it's like they already know what it is. They've just been trying to, you know, like you said, the Jedi mind trick, the banana in the tailpipe, the okey-doke, the pump fake, the crossover. However, they need to get us out the way. Oh, that reminds me. I just saw a new movie that came out on Netflix that speaks to this whole worldwide movement of imperialism, and it's called Exterminate All the Brutes. And then it talks about how white people exterminate all the brutes. It's talking about how, you know, basically Europeans have gone out and pillaged and plundered and killed people in the name of, you know, European royalty, only to, you know, industrialize and eventually compromise and further force into a demise certain people that they have just become to publicly, you know, shame and just exploit, so that it has generational effects, you know. And they were saying that, you know, it seems like, yeah, this is such a tragic part of our history, but it's like, yeah, no, this is still going on. This is how they get down. This is the movement. This is the trickle down. So either you know or you don't. What are you going to do now? Be proactive, or are you going to wait until it hits you in the front door and then try to do something?
Yeah. Well, you know, Joel, this just leads us into our next topic of discussion, the situation with Georgia State Representative Park Cannon, who is fighting charges.
The all-new Hyundai Elantra
she's facing 8 years. She's facing 8 years in Georgia for knocking on the door of the governor while he signed this particular bill into existence that is basically a voter suppression bill. It makes it more difficult for minorities to vote. It's a bill that's backed by Georgia GOP that will overhaul election protocols in that particular state. And it was signed into law, you know, last Thursday. The legislation includes new restrictions on voting by mail and increased legislative control over elections in the state. And people are outraged by it. And the fact that a representative, a state representative, was knocking on the door during the time that this bill was signed, they arrested her. And it's now we can't even voice our opinion, you know, for laws that's being put into effect that limits us. You know, they had, you know, at least three officers, you know, handcuff this woman and escort her out of the building in which she works in. You know, where she, so this is really getting to a point to where it's a fight. We can't even voice our opinions now, you know, when it comes to this society of how it's being ruled. You know, I read where it said the governor was delivering remarks after signing the bill when he was interrupted by 10 protesters, including two lawmakers outside his Atlanta office. Kemp, who's a Republican, asked for an aide, "What's the problem?" Before a live stream of ceremony went dark. So this is not something that's new. State Representative Eric Thomas, a Democrat who's black, was arrested after knocking on Kemp's door during the speech. And that was another state representative other than Park Cannon. The measure was filled with voter suppression tactics, a top Democrat said. And we are witnessing right now a massive and unvanished assault on voting rights, unlike anything that we've ever seen since the Jim Crow era. And that was Senator Minority Leader Gloria Butler who said that. So this is something that we need to really take a strong look at, because not only is it going on in Georgia, but there are other states in which this law is on the docket. And there's going to be more governors trying to sign this. And basically what it is, people, is the Republicans are sore losers where they, they keep talking this voters fraud. And keep in mind, Kemp is the same governor that cheated that young lady out of that office last time they had the election down there in Georgia for the governor's position. So he's not even supposed to be the governor in the state of Georgia by right. So basically what they're trying to do is suppress the minority vote to where more Republicans can vote and take over. So they're trying to change the rules of the game right now. They're trying to change the rules of the game in which they set. You know, they see the people are starting to come out and vote in record numbers, and a lot of those people are minorities. They are citizens, so they have the right to vote, and they're trying to stop that. They're trying to stop that because they realize that the numbers have them at a disadvantage. So this is a situation where we see that is currently going on in the state of Georgia that I think is going to start going on across the country and other states as well. Lambert, did you have anything you wanted to say about that particular incident?
Yeah, I actually do. First of all, I'd like to send a shout out to the black folks in Georgia. I think people don't realize what an amazing thing they accomplished before these white folks lost their mind and don't care if you see it. What Stacey Abrams and the black folks did in Georgia, it's not highlighted enough for me. They actually saved this country from Mitch McConnell being in the position he was in before they voted the two new senators. And even with Georgia's, and I have family in Georgia, there's a reason why they call the South, the Dirty South. A lot of people look at those rappers and they get to dancing and all that behind their rapping, but that term, Dirty South, that's what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. If they had the right population, they wouldn't worry about it, but they know that they got to make it like South Africa. They're the minority. If you take all the minorities that they call minority and you understand math like they do, they know that if they get to where it's just one person, one vote, they may never win again. So that's why they're going all across the country. And remember now, they got the Supreme Court. So if you file a lawsuit and get up there to those satanic people, they may vote that it's legal. Then what you going to do? See, I think this is the moment of truth for black people to unite. If we don't unite now behind what we see out there right now and suffer from that Willie Lynch stuff, as a race, we're going to suffer in this country if we don't unite. Shout out to Stacey Abrams. That's the lady who beat him racist Kemp governor, she beat him, and he changed the rules at the last minute. So what did she do? Instead of letting it be egotistical for her, she said, let me get back to Georgia and keep organizing. And Stacey Abrams and them black folks in Georgia, I thank them for flipping the Senate. Otherwise, we'd have Mitch McConnell, and the way Trump made his moves down the stretch, Trump could have stole Georgia and been back in the White House. So shout out to them black people in the South, because they got a lot of courage down there in Georgia. They really do.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Joe, anything else you want to say that relates to it?
There for a second. Yeah, I got to cut off there for a second. I missed the probably the last 2 or 3 minutes of the segment. What was your lead-in question?
Well, we were talking about just the situation, and Lambert alluded to we just need to unify. If we don't unify right now over this, you know, it's we in for a world of hurt. So, you know, he was also giving a big shout out to Stacey Abrams and the work that her team is still continuing to do down there in order to continue to fight.
Yeah. You know, I think it's you know, have so many different layers to it, you know, and the people that are on the front lines down there, you know, trying to galvanize the people to get to the polls and to make those changes. I mean, you're right. It takes a magnificent effort to be able to, you know, do that. And Brother Lambert is right. You know, it is high time for us to begin to, you know, find ways how we can come together. And, you know, it's kind of like kids. And, you know, I've been a teacher forever. You know, I've worked with adults, I've worked with kids, and, you know, especially with kids, you know, they are going through something very peculiar during this COVID time, because a lot of kids haven't been able to socialize with their friends for about a year. You know, they haven't been able to, you know, do what they normally do. You know, so my son has difficulty, you know, sharing, you know, playing without getting his emotions or his feelings hurt, because he hasn't had an opportunity to, you know, use those skills of socializing for the point of productive play, having fun, and ultimately, you know, getting healthier by just, you know, moving and grooving, learning, and learning through play. And likewise, you know, when we look at black folks, youngest culture on the planet, learning how to be a part of a system that never even had a place for us, trying to find a place in the game where we were always the fall guy, trying to get ourselves, you know, mixed up into a system that was only designed to spit us out. You know, it's a very ambiguous situation. And I think that's why it's important for black folks to start having the conversations now. You know, not just around, you know, what can we do as individuals, but what can we do as a collective, you know, and start really looking at the different things that it takes to make real change. Because I think a lot of it is we all share similar passions, but many times we don't know what to do, and we may know what to do, but not know how to do it. You know, we don't have anybody grandfathering us into anything, you know. So when it comes to the hows and the whys and trying to figure out how to fix something that was never intended to work for us in the first place, and simultaneously trying to decide, well, how do we create something from within without, you know, becoming a target? You know, it's a very delicate situation moving forward, family. But we still have to be able to get in good trouble, still continue to, you know, do the things that, you know, are going to forward our culture and communities by representing the truth, you know, being agents of the light, you know, shining the light in the dark areas, you know, showing love, you know, making sure that, you know, those type things are the pillars and the bedrock of, you know, any type of organizations, any type of galvanizations, any type of collaborations that we have moving forward, because you know, we tend to get together and start hating on each other. You know, so you got, you know, 50 chiefs and no Indians, so to speak. You know, too many generals and not enough soldiers. So, you know, trying to figure out, you know, that we're not playing checkers. This is chess.
This is chess, baby.
It's a whole different game. Yeah, you got 16 possible plays that you can make on any one turn. Make your next move your best move. And until we share that mentality, you know, and what's even worse in my eyes now is that the generation that's, you know, coming before us now, they're so detached from that constructive social growth, you know, learning right and wrong from doing, you know. So it's time for us to start to find ways to connect and engage with future generations, leaving a blueprint for a legacy that would transcend all of the evils that have been done to us without having to reconstruct some type of retaliation phase or some type of movement, you know, that would move us backwards, like you were saying earlier.
Well, Joe, you're on the right track, man. We have to continue to put in place solutions to combat these situations that we find ourselves in. And it's going to take a collective effort. It's not just going to be me and you. It's got to be the entire community. We have to put our heads together collectively and, you know, sometimes think outside the box, because this is not, I mean, because what's been working is, I don't know if it's still working or not, or if it's ever worked. We have to look at things. We can't continue to do the same thing. I'll tell you that, because doing the same thing has not gotten us far. We have to look at new options, new ideas, creative new ways to combat this situation. And again, I think it's part of that is voting these good boys out of office and making sure that we hold the people that we put in office accountable. This new administration that's being put in place, at first I wasn't too happy with what was going on as far as the cabinet being put together. But I'm going to give them a chance. Let this administration give this administration an opportunity to grow and see what happens. One of the last things the president said before he walked off from his last press conference, where he addressed the nation, was "Let's get to work." And he mentioned a number of programs that's supposed to be put in place for this new infrastructure. So we'll see. The infrastructure that I like to see him focus more on is the Justice Department and changing the laws as it relates to these officers taking the lives of black folks. So with that being said, I want to hear if either one of you have anything else that you want to mentioned with this particular topic, and then we'll go into Pretty Revolutionary, and then we'll hear Educate and Protect with Brother Joe Birch. So, Lambert, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I would. From what I saw all over the world after George Floyd was murdered, that's what's going to have to happen. See, the young people, they don't really want to hear what used to happen and whatever, because it's not working. So it was right. God that inspired that movement that you saw last summer, all them different races. I'm not talking about the people who infiltrated them. I'm talking about the ones who went out there sincerely and start throwing statues in the water in other countries. They started that. Mm-hmm. That didn't start in America. Mm-hmm. Them white kids mm-hmm. was out there throwing statues in the water in England and all over the world. They were sick of it because mm-hmm. Hip-hop is what united the youth. Yeah. I love that hip-hop came along because it helped the races see each other. in a humane way. Their parents and grandparents are the ones perpetrating this hatefulness, and I'm glad they're dying off, and I'm glad their birth rate is not increasing, because that means that my grandchildren and great-grandchildren would have to deal with these racists, and I hope their birth rate continues to decline. And I'm not apologetic about that. That's it for me.
right on, Lambert. Thank you very much. Hey, Lambert, give a shout out about the cheesecake. Let everybody know what you're famous for.
Well, we're a family-owned cheesecake business based in the capital of California, Sacramento. One of the most racist cities in California is Sacramento, and I was born and raised here. If you want to look us up, I'll leave the website. The company is called To the Bay and Back Cheesecakes, but the website is www. And I'm sure brother can link y'all to it. It's TOTHEBAY, To the Bay and AND, and then back, BACK. So it's To the Bay and Back, and then everybody should know how to spell cheesecake.com. And we deal with all races and both sexes, because cheesecake applies to that. And I'm just being candid. I don't really go out of my way to reach out to that white boy. If he come around, I'll put him on the track like a pimp, but I don't want him near us, really, because there's enough people out there that we can make a living with, and we can just kind of avoid him. That's it.
Right on. Right on.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lambert. I appreciate you, brother. Always being real
too,
straightforward.
I hope you feel better and get well soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. I'm feeling better already. When I hear that brother, that's one of our elders. When I hear Brother Lambert speak, you know, I just have to. I'm like one of those guys. Hey, I get behind this brother because he's for real. You know, he's a follower of Farrakhan, and he's for real. He's straight up. So I appreciate that, ladies and gentlemen. You're still tuned in to the Team DLW Unity Movement here on the J. King Radio Network. And I'm your host, Mr. DLW, and we're joined by one of our facilitators of one of our segments, Educate and Protect, Brother Joel Birch. We're going to take a quick musical break, and when we come back, it's going to be pretty revolutionary, followed by Educate and Protect with Brother Joel Birch. And this past week, we lost one of the great legends of hip-hop, of the music industry, DMX. You know him from a number of different songs, you know, Party Up in Here, and What's My Name, and Where My Dog's At, and he was one of the original Rough Riders, and, you know, Stop, Drop, Open Up Shop, you know, that's how them Rough Riders roll. But we're going to play one of his, one of my all-time favorite songs of DMX, and this is What's My Name. We'll be right back right after this. Come on!
Come on!
What's up? dead and it's in there. I put the storm, never coming back. Last time you saw that kid, the last time you see that kid. Black. No more death. If in a minute you gonna have grandma being the only family member left. Bust my. I got the kind of sucker, but I'm always down for the 101. Dog, no life. We gon' get to the bottom of this here. If it takes all night, stop, drop, open up shop. Fake off, north, screaming for the cops. Ride, oh, God. And what that means is that I'll tell money bye-bye and pop him in his right eye. Holding figures as big as jiggers. That's that bull. Don't they know that around me talking about what you got will get you hit? I'm not a nice person. You didn't smack the blood out you twice, dog, and that's before I start cursing. I stay flipping. 1 minute I'm cool. The next minute I'm up on you, money ripping. That's my style. I'm a pretty dog. Leave you all bloody dog service with a smile. Suck my. When you catch up in the jail before, know that it's about to get thick. Let's get it on, baby. Don't be going against four people in one. And you think you crazy? I lost my mind. And I'm about to make you lose yours too from far away one time.
Present to you Pretty Revolutionary. Today, I will be presenting a speech by Miriam Makeba, also known as Mama Africa. This speech was presented at the UN in 1964 on apartheid. If you listen closely, you will see that Mama Makeba's words are still relevant today. I ask you and all the leaders of the world, would you act differently? Would you keep silent and do nothing if you were in our place? Would you not resist if you were allowed no right in your own country because the color of your skin is different to that of the rulers? And if you were punished for even asking for equality, Mr. Chairman, there is already too much hatred in my country. I'm afraid that if the world keeps turning and the government is madly proceeding with more brutality and is trying to take the lives of our most beloved leaders and poison their team, you cannot stop the hatred from overflowing. I appeal to you and through you to all the countries of the world to do everything you can to stop the coming tragedy. I appeal to you to save the lives of our leaders, to empty the prisons of all those who should never have been there, and to help us win our right to human dignity. Thank you. I hope you all enjoyed that speech by Mama Makeba.
Bonnie the Beat, y'all killed it, Daddy.
Hey everyone, it's your girl Rhonda Supreme, and you are tuned into the Team DLW Unity Movement. Check it out every Sunday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with your man, Mr. DLW. And now, back to the show.
Yes, indeed, we're back. That was pretty revolutionary. By Brittany Turner. Oh, wow. 1964. Wow. Even today, those words that she spoke are still relevant. You know, what if it was you? What if it was you? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for our Educate and Protect segment with Brother Joel Birch. Take the floor, my man. It's all on you.
Yes, sir. This beat make me want to rap, though, DL. As soon as I hear it, I feel like,
You know.
Yeah.
One time.
One time for the family. One time for the God. One time for... Happy Sunday, everybody. I just am really glad to be back on the mic with you guys to just have an opportunity to share some insight with you during this crazy time. You know, we like to have a good time on the show, and we like to get deep sometimes, and this is where we need to just take a little pause and, you know, just reflect on some of the things that have been going on, you know, of late, and start to really consider how to make our next move, our best move. How do we get to this point of real change, real lasting change? And, you know, we have to have a playbook. And before we can start getting the plays, we need to have a solid philosophy or a solid accumulation of reasons and explanations and precepts and concepts that we can stand on that will be pillars in terms of what is valuable to us. And it's unfortunate, family, that our conditioning in this country hasn't really afforded us the type of knowledge and growth that we need to eradicate some of society's ills, especially as quickly as we would like. But I think we have to revisit something that we talked about earlier before we could even get to that point, because too often, you know, we're ready to do something, do anything, but in a game of chess, that's the last thing you want to do. In a game that's complicated, that's the last thing you want to do, is just do something or just do anything. And in chess, you know, when you don't have a good move to make and you just make any move randomly, we call it just pushing wood. Family, we have no time for wood pushing. We have to be about the business of proclaiming and standing for what's right. And the way that we do that is being able to recognize the truth. But what do we know about how willing and able we are to hold on to the truth, especially now with so many distractions? You know, with social media and technology and the instantaneous services that we get, you know, our patience, you know, has a tendency to start to run low. But when we start to reflect on the importance of how do we grasp and hold on to the truth so that we aren't affected by what is tempting us so that we're not affected by what is enticing us, and so that we can have a real chance of making the types of changes that we need that are lasting. So I want to just kind of talk about the truth and reality of everything, because the truth is we know, and a lot of families especially, we still, you know, hold tight to the truth. You know, we hold fast to what the old folks used to say. You know, we got a lot of wise sayings, you know, that kind of help us to build our character, form our morals, and start to give us a really good sense of what our underlying values should be as people. But when you start to look at society and how society handles truth, they give you versions of truth. They even start, when I say they, I mean society at large, and I mean popular culture, because truth is the truth, is the truth. The truth doesn't change. The only thing that changes is our reality, our perspectives, our perception of the truth. And that's why, you know, democracy is a great thing, because, you know, sometimes establishing truth can be difficult to determine what happened in the past. But see, you know, too many issues that we're dealing with now, they're not dealing with issues of the past. They're dealing with issues of the present. And that's where we need to be, family, is how do we deal with the issues of the present? Yes, we know that some of these issues have been, you know, passed down from generation to generation. But in effect, we still have just today to deal with those type ills, having a plan to thwart the effects of the trauma that's been dealt to us over these decades. And we have to be careful not to get caught up in this whirlwind of how to balance my own personal perspectives. You know, so as you are sitting at home, you know, thinking about this, how do I balance my perception of the past, the present, and the future?
Boy!
Are we doing that?
Hey, it was appropriate for the moment. I'm sorry. My bad. Flavor jumped in there somewhere. My bad, brother. Okay.
No, for sure. Hey, if we're doing that, let me know. I'll be ready for it. He took me way off there.
Right on.
So, you know, really looking at how we can balance the past, the present, and the future is really what we do as human beings, you know, when we're trying to find peace. And, you know, something that I realize is, you know, peace is not something that can be, you know, contemplated. You really can't figure out, you know, peace. Peace is something that you have to receive. Peace is a gift. Peace is something that's given to you when you, you know, bask and resonate in God's presence. And so when you think about being present, you think about being in God's presence. And when you're in God's presence, you start to develop a sense of urgency based off of your calling, why you're here. When we talk about calling, we talk about purpose. We talk about function. And the only way that you can be critically engaged in your purpose and your function is to be present. I am victim of this myself. I struggle with paralysis analysis, you know, looking at things for too long, overthinking it, you know, bringing in too many different components from the past, you know, in terms of, well, you know, my experience suggests that, you know, there could be some complications or some problems in this area. Let's try to straighten it out before we move forward. Or just the opposite. I'm worried about something that's going to happen in the future. What if this and what if that? Those type of things keep you away from being able to bask in God's presence and be present with what he is trying to determine is your best mode of action as it relates to your function and your purpose. When you really want to be filled with purpose, when you want to really want to execute and fulfill your purpose, first ask yourself, is this something that you conjured, or is this something that is of a spiritual nature? And the way that you can determine it is if you're operating with spiritual currency. Spiritual currency deals with things like faith and obedience. It deals with things like grace and mercy. You know, it deals with things like forgiveness and patience, love,
joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control, those are eternal precepts. Those chips of transaction, those things are what keep you presently rich when you can bask and keep your mind on those things. But what happens is we're stuck with the disappointment of the past. We're stuck with the hurt of the past. We're stuck with the trauma of the past. And what we're hoping for right now in the Floyd case is that our present doesn't become like the past, and we can have a new hope for the future by holding misdoers on the police force accountable, by holding murderers accountable the same way that murderers are held accountable outside of law enforcement, and starting to look at how we can put ourselves in a position to affect that change. And there's so many more issues outside of just the law enforcement that we're dealing with when we're trying to figure out how to balance ourselves and deal with these societal ills while still trying to maximize our potential as individuals and not just survive but learn to thrive. And I think these principles will help us get there. I think that staying present is the linchpin. It's the hinging point between do we have a logical and reasonable grasp on the truth, or do we allow what has happened in the past or our anxiety about the to affect what we perceive as our reality and distort the truth, you know? So we really have to give ourselves time to jump into some of these other precepts that will keep us present, like love and trust. And not necessarily loving and trusting a system that has been broken, but like the brother was alluding to earlier, we have to fall in love with our Creator. We have to fall in love with our loved ones. We have to fall in love with keeping ourselves healthy, the self-care, you know, falling in love with the things that build our families up, you know, and starting to build trust around what we're teaching them will eventually lead to a change. We have to think generationally because life goes so fast, we won't be able to see all of the changes that we were desiring since we've, you know, started to experience all of the, you know, disruption and discord in our society. So trying to think, you know, forward in a way so that we make sure that we're passing on these most valuable traits of knowing how to love. You know, we have to really unpack that because, you know, we have become so desensitized and so, I would say, marginalized in the way that we think. We've marginalized the power of love and what it actually is for. What is love for? Love is not for our feeling. Love is to drive you to do something for somebody else. And so if we're not constantly trying to find new ways to do things for other people, if we're not continuing to find ways to bear each other's burdens, we're not even operating in our own cultural calling. Because as Black folks, we know in this country, we've been carrying America's burden since its conception. So we have to start to look at how we can continue that. How can we continue to form a love for America, for a nation that has never really loved us, the love of God, to love somebody that never loved you? Because whether they love you or not shouldn't be the contingency upon whether or not you show love. Can't love what they've done, can't love what's happened to you. Again, that's dwelling in the past. But if you have hope for the future, it starts with a present tense love and not just loving what the country does for you. Not just loving what the country makes you feel. But after having traveled, you know, I traveled, you know, considerably when I was a younger man, and I got an opportunity to, you know, see different cultures. And, you know, it really changed the way that, you know, my perspective, you know, but for individuals that haven't had an opportunity to see that, you know, they're almost forced to believe what somebody else tells them, whether it's from another author in a book, whether it's something that they saw on television, but rarely have the opportunity to actually go out and do for themselves. And that's one of the you know, kind of the drawbacks from technology is, you know, things are so instantaneously digitized that we don't have a chance to actually get out and do for ourselves.
And so getting back to how that equates to building up our potential by staying present and staying relevant, it's because those underlying principles of love and trust is what hold it together. You know, knowing that you're doing something for a certain reason that's going towards a positive and better end, knowing that you're building up somebody else's potential, you're building into someone else. And, it goes back to that team concept, you know, trying to put your brother's needs above your own, trying to put your sister's needs above your own, putting your teammates' needs above your own. Because when everybody on the team has that same mentality, you win. It's never an individualized claim when you think about victory, when you think about anything that you've attained. It's been done with help. Somebody has had to teach you. Everything that has been learned has been taught. And so if we don't have these solid principles about how love operates, how trust operates, and how those things help us to balance our presence and help us to kind of push out the damaging effects that the past can have and that even the future can have. Now, that's not to say that everything in the past is bad and everything in the future is, it will give you anxiety. But at the same time, when your mindset is stuck on those things, you know, when it's stuck on the things that you're accomplishing and not the person that you're becoming, when it's, you know, stuck in fear of the unknown instead of walking by faith and not by sight. These are the things that help us to grow as a people when we can share those same values, understanding what it means to walk by faith and not by sight. Because that's what I mentioned last week, you know, being prepared for, you know, the worst with the George Floyd trial is because I've learned to walk by faith and not by sight. While I hope that this trial brings back a guilty verdict, even if they don't bring back a guilty verdict, I still know, believe, and trust that God is in control and that this chaos has been orchestrated by our Creator because He wants us to see and learn and appreciate how good and how deep His love is for us. But we're trying to figure it out ourselves. We're trying to, you know, put so much of our power into the hands of the government and let them figure it out instead of doing what we've always done. You know, we started in a family. We keep it in a tribe. And before you know it, it's not just tribal, it's regional. And then it's not just regional, it's national. But we're trying to because we've been through so much and we've been traumatized so much and there's such a mess. It's almost like, you know, I don't know if you've accidentally leaned on your toothpaste tube and you get toothpaste all over your sink and it's such a huge mess and it's a new tube. You really don't want to waste all that toothpaste, but how are you going to get it back in the tube, you know, without destroying the tube? You would literally have to cut the back of the tube off, scoop up the remnants and put it back in and then kind of tape it back together. And that's essentially what our government needs. It either needs to get the back end cut off and restored with what has been, you know, wasted, or you need to get a new tube. And I can't think of, you know, outside of metamorphosis or, like you said, some type of Jedi mind trick to, you know, get us to a place where we've always been without having to go through the rigmarole of, you know, demanding revenge. You know, saying, you know, okay, enough was enough. You want to fight? Okay, let's fight. And then it just is bad for everybody. And then we repeat the whole system of, you know, hate and regret and guilt and shame. And that becomes even more part of our family legacy. So trying to get beyond what's happened in the past and in order to really take hold of a future, you know, making sure that we bask on these things that will guarantee our potential and promise, which really equates to faith and obedience. How do we stay present? By continuing to be faithful, continuing to be obedient, continuing to be diligent about our quest for righteousness and not just being right. You know, it's not just,
you know, making your point and proving somebody else wrong and getting somebody else told. But, you know, doing the right thing is hard. You know, it's not always easy to do the right thing. And the harder it is to do the right thing usually means that that's a very good reason to do the right thing, even especially, you know, when it's hard. But it takes practice, and we need the support of each other. And that's why it's important for us to be on the same page. Because if we don't speak in the same language when it comes to how do we bolster our spirituality, how do we bolster, you know, our cognitive abilities, how do we enrich our thought process, how do we enrich our prayer life, how do we become better meditators, how do we, you know, find the truth that not just, it doesn't exist in us. We've been created. The truth exists because the truth exists. It was the truth is the truth is the truth. God is the truth. And so when you start to really put yourself in a position to know God, the truth is revealed to you. It's not something that you contemplate and come to understand through a series or a line of questions. It's a process of trial and error, of life application and life steps. And trying to be a diligent student by keeping track of these different events, either by telling stories to the kids or keeping track of it in journals or, you know, some real way to pass the knowledge down, because it's a very short life. We don't have a lot of time to continue to stay stuck in the past or become too anxious about the future. So in closing, family, these are some of the things that can really affect real change in our lives, not getting stuck in the past and not being so anxious about the future. In the past, we have disappointments and letdowns and setbacks. In the future, we've got expectations and then fear of the unknown. But when we stay present, we're able to actually realize the love that is inside of us, the love that has been given to us, the love that's around us, and how we can effectually love others in that way, reflecting the love that has been shown to us. Then we can start to build trust. When we have a solid foundation in love and we know how to trust each other, then we can begin to move forward and claim that promise that we've been given from God. We are oath keepers. We are promise keepers. We are so rich culturally, and it's evident in the way that everybody steals from us. So we have to recognize our own worth and start to really center ourselves around some of these most important principles. And if you're wondering, you know, it seems like a lot to try to understand and go through and unpack. But if you start doing it on a daily basis and you start to really look these things up, you know, using your, you know, books of antiquity, you know, going back into the spiritual books and going back into the Bible, you know, looking at how many different, you know, ways it's been spelled out for us, and decide for yourself who God is. Who is God to you? And how is he effectually playing a role in your life? And how are we going to get on the same page so that we can affect real change in our society? I suggest prayer, meditation, and staying in God's word, being able to do something that would help someone else, bear someone else's burden, stand in the gap for somebody else who can't stand for themselves, being a provider, being a teacher, being a motivator, being an inspiration, and continuing to do that work which we know will take us from where we are, family, to where we want to be. So with that, I will leave you with peace and blessings. I hope that something that was said will inspire you, will motivate you, and encourage you not to give up. No matter how long this road has been, we're not home yet, fam. We got to continue to fight the good fight. Peace and blessings. I love you. I'll holler at you next week. Peace.
Brother D.L., are you still there? Well, it seems like Brother D.L. is on a quick pause. We'll go ahead and let this nice instrumental go ahead and play out again.
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
I had the wrong mute button on. I was saying that all that was right on point, brother. I appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Again, ladies and gentlemen, that was Educate and Protect with Brother Joel Birch. Words of wisdom, words to live by. And I hope you all understand that because, hey, got to put it in the hands of the Almighty right now because only God can save us at this point. Unless y'all going to get out there and vote these suckers out for the office tomorrow. And I don't see it happening that quick. So, hey. It is what it is. We're gonna take another musical break, ladies and gentlemen, with another dedication to our fallen soldier, DMX. You know, a lot of great music he put out, and you've heard the instrumental of this earlier, but I'm ready for the song. Because they're going to make us lose our minds up in here, if they ain't careful. So here we go. We'll be right back, right after this. Woo!
Woo! Y'all going to make me lose my mind up in here. Y'all going to make me go all out up in here. Y'all going to make me act.
To bring it to you cowards, then it's gonna be quick. I owe your mans have been to jail before. Suck my dick and all the muffled cats you run with. Get done with, dumb quick. You going from the dog or some bum. I say go to click, click. Now I'm 1-1, all over some dumb. Ain't that something? You remind me of a strip club. Every time you come around, it's like, what? I just gotta get my dicks up. And I don't know who the fuck you think you talking to, but I'm not him, I explain. So watch what you do, or you gon' find yourself buried next to someone else. And we all thought you loved yourself, but that couldn't have been the issue. Or maybe they just saying that now cause they miss you. Maybe they try to diss you. That's why you laying on your back, looking at the roof of the church, preaching, telling the truth and it hurts.
Y'all gon' make me lose my mind up in here. Y'all gon' make me go on. Up in here, y'all gon' make me act a fool. Up in here, y'all gon' make me lose my cool. Up in here.
Off the chain, I leave soft in the brain. Still want the fame, off the name. First of all, you ain't rap long enough to be with me. You ain't strong enough. So whatever it is you puffin' on, they got you thinking that you Superman. I got the kryptonite, and I smack you with my dick in the mic. Characters, not even good actors. What's gonna be the outcome? It's out of all the factors. You whack, you twisted, your girl's a
hoe.
You broke, the kid ain't yours, and everybody knows. Your old man say you stupid, you be like, so I love my baby mother, I never let her go. I'm tired of weak, whining over food that don't belong to them. Wrong with them, get up for real, like my mans in them, who get it all with the strength of their hands with them.
Man, y'all gon' make me lose my mind up in here. Y'all gon' make me go all out up in here. Y'all gon' make me act a fool up in here. Y'all gon' make me lose my cool up in here.
I bring down rings, the heaviest curse ahead. No more talk. Put them in the dirt instead. You keep walking, that you're trying to end up red. Cause if I end up dead, I end up dead. Cause you're a soft type. Fake up north type. It's like a soft fight. Dog is a dog, blood thicker than water. We done been through the mud and we quicker to slaughter. The bigger the order, the more we want out. When up in there, everybody come out. When the body burn out, sun in the sun out. I'ma keep it out. Running his mouth, I'ma blow his tongue out. Listen,
what?
He's about to be missing. You know who gon' find you? The old man fishing. Grandma wishing your soul's at rest, but it's hard to digest with the size of the hole in your chest.
Y'all gon' make me lose my mind up in here. Y'all gon' make me go all out up in here. Y'all gon' make me act a fool up in here. Y'all gon' make me lose my cool up in here.
One, two.
Yeah, that was DMX, the legendary DMX. Party up in here. Y'all gonna make me lose my mind. And I'm trying to make sure I keep my mind because we are pretty much done with the show, ladies and gentlemen. And if you missed the show, please, 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 after we conclude, pull it up by going to teamdlw.com or simply by clicking on the link and listen to it again and again with your family and friends. A lot of pertinent information, a lot of good information as it relates to the trial of this murderous cop. We're looking for closing arguments real soon. And as we said, it's time to pay the piper, baby. It's time for this sucker to pay. 9 minutes, 29 seconds, you kept your knee on that man's neck to take the very life out of him, to take him away from his family, to take him off the face of this earth with no remorse. It's time for you to pay. Guilty on all charges is what we want to hear before the end of this week. Guilty on all charges. And if that's not the verdict, Lord help us. You think everything went crazy with Mike Brown, Tavir Martin? I'm sorry. With some of the others. Tamir Rice, excuse me. Thank you. You think things went crazy with their cases when those murderous cops was let off the hook? I don't think we've seen anything yet if they let this one go. We can't. It's time for justice to prevail. It's time for righteousness to prevail. And it's time for you, Mr. Chavez, to pay the piper. That's the first time I've said his name, and it'll probably be the last. Time for him to pay the piper, though. Brother Joel, I want to thank you, my man, for joining us today throughout the show.
Always. Always, brother.
A lot of great, great wisdom, words of advice, and we appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. We also want to appreciate y'all having me, man. That's what's up.
Always. And we also want to thank Brittany Turner, our pretty revolutionary, for her encouraging words as it relates to pretty revolutionary and keeping us on point, reminding us of what's important. Yes, yeah, we want to thank her as well. So, hey, we're getting ready to end the show as soon as, you know, the internet stopped acting up. Yeah, we always had these little bitty problems, but it's okay. We worked through it. Remember, the show is archived, so you can listen to it time and time again with your family and friends simply by clicking on the link. It's real easy to do. So, you know, make sure you do that as we continue to invite you every Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the J. King Radio Network. So make sure you check us out. Same time next week, same place. We also want to thank J. King and the rest of the J. King radio family. We also want to thank Mr. Lynn Tolliver, our executive producer, Mr. Lynn Tolliver. Also want to thank Sister Queen Angela Sales, my co-host, my Road Warrior co-host, who's out there again traveling, and safe travels to you, sister. Safe travels also to Mama King Adeolomo, who's out in Benin right now. She's handling her royal business out there along with the rest of the family, you know. So it's a beautiful thing when you're female king and you got to rule over your kingdom. So we appreciate her, and we just want to make sure that everything is everything. Super shout out to everybody who's listening. We appreciate you for tuning in to the Team DLW Unity Movement. Make sure you tell somebody about us. You know, this is the show that focuses on educating, elevating, and motivating our listeners to a higher level of consciousness and awareness in order to empower and uplift our communities around the world. Check us out every Sunday, ladies and gentlemen. So you know what it is. When we're having fun, time flies pretty quickly. So set your goals high and reach for the stars. And make sure you do something to make yourself and others around you happy. Until next time, I'm Mr. DLW for Brother Joel Burks and Sister Queen Angela and Mama King Adeolomo. We'll see you next show. Peace. Janet, take us away, baby.
Moshe, Tim Moshe.